case is number 21-10189, Rodriguez Duran versus Secretary of State.
May it please the court. My name is David Stoller. I'm a private attorney in Orlando, Florida, and I represent Mr. Rodriguez Duran in this another consular non-reviewability case. After this case was briefed, there was a published opinion in Del Valle showing that courts do have subject matter jurisdiction when it comes to these consular non-reviewability cases, but that there's a limitation on what the courts can do. And so this case, I believe, is distinguishable from the one in Del Valle because in Del Valle, while the court had provided a citation to a provision of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which gave rise to an understanding of why the individual was being deemed inadmissible for making a false representation to being a U.S. citizen, and the same is present here, the difference in this case is that we actually have a copy of the record upon which we believe that the consular officer made that determination. And if you review that entire record, there's nothing in there suggesting that there was any false claim, any false representation to being a United States citizen. Indeed, if there was such a false representation to being a United States citizen, the Immigration and Nationality Act would have required Customs and Border Protection officer at the port of entry to process the individual for expedited removal, something that did not happen. The whole reason that Mr. Rodriguez Duran's spouse had to pursued what we call a provisional waiver was because she was let into the United States instead of being subject to expedited removal, as must have happened if she had made a false representation to being a United States citizen at the port of entry. So when the refusal sheet came out, what we tried to do was make use of the regulations that the Department of State has that allow us to try and overcome the ground of ineligibility or inadmissibility that had been determined by the consular officer. And we got nothing back from the consular officer. So it's clear that the factual scenario giving rise to the grounds of inadmissibility, at least two of the three grounds of inadmissibility, pertain to this July 2007 interaction that the spouse had with the folks, Customs and Border Protection, while she attempted to come into the United States. And there is nothing at all in there that suggests that there was any false representation to being that she was a United States citizen.
But doesn't Del Valle actually foreclose that argument? Aren't you asking us to take a look and review the consular official's decision, which is, I think, what we said in Del Valle we couldn't do?
No, what we tried to make evident in our complaint and also in our appeal that we understand this doctrine of consular non-reviewability. We are not asking the court to take a review of what the consular officer did, because as you say, unless we can establish this what the consular officer did was not facially legitimate or bona fide, you don't get there. Basically, all that discretion is left with the consular officer. In this case, what we're trying to say is that the State Department did not follow the procedures that are in place to allow us to try to overcome that. We're not asking the court to make a review or the court to, although we did ask for an in-camera review of the documents as the statute allows, but the more pressing issue that we're trying to bring forth is that there is a provision that the State Department has available to try and overcome these issues.
So which specific CFR provision subsection are you trying to travel under?
It's 22... CFR, let me get to the right page here. Um, 4281C. So it says, if the grounds of ineligibility upon which the visa was refused cannot be overcome by the presentation of additional evidence, the consular officer at a post or alternative shall review the case without delay. And then there's this whole process that goes into place about kind of a, I would say, kind of a backroom kind of review of these determinations. So the door is open to allowing us to try and present evidence that would overcome the ground, and the State Department is absolutely silent.
Did you present additional evidence?
We did, and exhibits in our that were attached to our complaint are the emails that were sent to the consular office in Juarez.
So wouldn't 4281E be the provision that mandates reconsideration of a refusal upon the submission of additional evidence?
Yes, I apologize. There's two provisions that we argued here. One is C and one is E. Yes, E is the one that I'm referring to. My apologies.
And you submitted additional evidence within 1 year of the date of refusal?
We did.
Okay.
Because we had made a request under the Freedom of Information Act to get a copy of the entire file that I guess it would be the Department of Homeland Security maintained regarding the spouse. And so we had all of these documents that we can only assume were the documents upon which the consular officer relied, and we're at a loss. The consular officer says there is the individual made a false representation to being a United States citizen, but the documents that were provided in response in accordance with what the regulations say don't say any of what the consular officer has concluded. So the focus of our appeal, our challenge, is not on consular, not on the court reviewing what it is that the decision made by the consular officer. It's trying to force the agency to actually follow its own written procedural guidance and make the findings that are provided for in those regulations.
Go ahead.
Sorry, that's just one follow-up. Then,
sure.
Does your complaint cite subsection E, or does your complaint cite subsection?
It does. Can I just get my appendix real quick and make sure? Yeah, so the complaint, I think the complaint cites it. The complaint says that paragraph 49, plaintiff submits that the USCON, the post, failed to follow 22 CFR 4281 by failing to review evidence tending to overcome the purported ground. And then the next paragraph 50, the plaintiff submits that the USCON failed to follow 22 CFR 4281 by failing to refer the case for an advisory opinion. So while there's not a pinpoint cite within the regulation, the language of the complaint follow from what those pinpoint sites would otherwise say.
So let me see if I understand. So you've alleged two procedural errors under C and under E, but I didn't see anywhere in your complaint where you alleged a constitutional violation. Is that right? You didn't make a constitutional due process claim in your complaint.
We didn't cite to the Constitution as a grounds upon which the court could grant relief. And then in our appellate brief, there is a claim of a due process violation, which I would agree, I would concede that we can't bring forward at this point because it's not in the complaint.
And what is your best authority that a procedural error like this one can overcome the doctrine of consular non-reviewability?
Well, I think the cases that have come out from the Supreme Court indicate that there's two ways to overcome, to get around constitutional non-reviewability. One is this, not facially legitimate or bona fide. And then the other is that there was a procedural error. So I think Kerry versus Dinn talk about it. Most of all the cases that kind of go back to Kleindienst, sorry if I mispronounced that, all refer back and talk about these kind of two ways in order to overcome this idea of consular non-reviewability. I mean, the procedures are there for a reason, and while the State Department is free to absolutely refuse and not look at it, review the things that we want them to to review, if the procedure is there for us to be able to try and overcome the ground of ineligibility, and it's one, unfortunately, that kills the entire possibility of the individual being able to come back in the United States. So if she is determined to have made a false claim to false representation to being a United States citizen, there is no waiver that's available for that. And again, had that been something that had been known to us at the very beginning, we would have never sent this individual along the pathway that we sent her upon, because if you're ineligible to receive a visa, despite being married to a permanent resident, it makes absolutely no sense to apply for the benefits. On top of which, as was the case that we tried to argue with Del Valle, this whole provisional waiver setup is such that if the individual is inadmissible to the United States on some ground other than the unlawful presence at 8 USC 1182A9B, then the approval of the provisional waiver is not going to happen. So again, you wouldn't approve the provisional waiver stateside before the individual is scheduled for an appointment at the consular office if there was some other ground. And so, like as in Del Valle, while the consular office, consular officers may have information available to them that we don't have available to us, there has to be some connection between the information known and the ground of inadmissibility that has been alleged.
Counsel, I'm trying to ask you a question, but you wouldn't pause long enough for me to come in. What I can't understand is if due process violation is not reviewable because of the consular non-reviewability doctrine, it seems to me a fortiori that a failure to follow your own regulations would not be.
Well, the case law would suggest otherwise. The case law says that if the determination is not facially legitimate or bona fide, or there is some violation of procedural error, those two are reasons that you can get around or that a court could exercise jurisdiction. I think that's a bad way to say it, because I think the court's made clear that the court has subject matter jurisdiction over these cases. But I guess getting to the next point, which is overcoming the motion to dismiss and then getting into the nitty-gritty of the case itself.
What is a due process violation if it's not a procedural violation?
Well, I think that's what Your Honor is I think getting at is that there's this larger issue of whether or not there is any violation of law to the spouse, the lawful permanent resident spouse, such that the court can exercise jurisdiction over. I see my time is up. Can I answer the question?
Sure.
Whether the court can exercise jurisdiction to listen to the case, I would go back to Carrier versus Dinn and say that there, it's a messy opinion in regards to what the plurality holds, but I think the plurality holds that there is jurisdiction to consider these kind of errors.
I've got one more question. Has this circuit said that there's a procedural exception of the sort that you're describing?
I'd have to read Del Valle again, because that's the only opinion.
I don't think it said that.
And it very well may not have. We come from, I believe it's Carrier versus Dinn from the Supreme Court.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Sean Siakinen for the respondents. I think it's often helpful to begin an appellate argument by identifying and framing the primary issue on appeal. I wasn't sure what that could possibly be coming in here this morning, because this court's opinion in Del Valle does directly address, reject, and foreclose all of Mr. Rodriguez Duran's arguments, including these arguments that he's presented just now. Del Valle leaves no room for judicial review of the consular officer's decision not to grant his wife a visa as alleged in this complaint. And I'd like to turn to this court's language in Del Valle. Separation of power concerns about the intrusion on the political branch's authority counsel that justify the consular non-reviewability doctrine, which prohibits courts from reviewing the executive's exercise of its delegated power so long as that power is executed conducted on the basis of a facially legitimate and bona fide reason. That's Del Valle citing Mandel and Dinn. There's no suggestion there that you can obtain review of a consular officer's decision by alleging a procedural error. Del Valle goes on to say, when the executive exercises Congress's delegated plenary power on the basis of a facially legitimate and bona fide reason, the courts will neither look behind the exercise of that discretion nor test it by balancing the justification against the constitutional rights of those who challenge the decision. Again, that's Del Valle quoting Mandel. And then in Trump versus Hawaii, the Supreme Court, interpreting Dinn, said that decisions regarding the admission and exclusion of foreign nationals are a fundamental sovereign attribute exercised by the government's political departments. So Del Valle, Trump, Dinn, and Mandel cannot be read to leave any room for the sort of end run around the consular non-reviewability doctrine that my friend suggests today. And if you look at the cases cited in his brief on this point, which are all in footnotes 9, 10, or 11, those cases are either Mandel or Dinn, which clearly do not stand for that proposition and in fact directly refute it, or they're cases involving requests for involving removals or deportation, none of those cases involve a non-resident alien seeking admission to the country in front of a consular officer. So those cases are all easily distinguishable. So turning back to Del Valle, this court held in that case that a consular officer provides a facially legitimate and bona fide reason for denying a visa simply by citing to the statutory provision that bars aliens who had previously made a false claim of U.S. citizenship, or simply by citing to the statutory provision that bars aliens who had remained in the U.S. unlawfully for a year or more without anything else. And in this case, the consular officer cited to both of those same statutory provisions in denying Mr. Rodriguez-Duran's his wife's visa application. Therefore, under Del Valle, the consular officer provided a facially legitimate, bona fide reason, and the judicial branch may not look behind that exercise of discretion, nor balance it against claimed constitutional rights, much less against an alleged procedural error, absent plausible and particular allegations of bad faith, which are not alleged in the complaint, or anywhere in this record. So that should be the end of this matter. I welcome the court's questions.
You would agree that Del Valle did not directly address Mr. Duran's argument, though, right? That there's an exception to the doctrine for procedural error? You're arguing based on the reasoning of the case, I think.
Well, I guess that's a fair point. It doesn't address that argument in the sense that the argument wasn't made, but I don't see any way that Del Valle or any of the Supreme Court cases upon which it follows could possibly be consistent with such an exception. I mean, any visa applicant could allege any procedural violation, and if that was the rule, it would obviously be the exception that swallows the rule. The consular non-reviewability doctrine would have very limited, if any, effect. The point of the doctrine is that the judicial branch is except in very, very rare circumstances, Congress and the executive have determined that this branch should not be intruding into those decisions absent plausible allegations of bad faith, which aren't alleged here.
Let me encourage you before I ask the question not to fight the hypothetical, because I'm not saying that we're going to do this. And by answering this question, you are not agreeing that we should. If we did decide that there was a procedural exception, do you think there is a difference between 4281C and 4281E? Does the language of one of those seem more mandatory than the other to you?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't have those provisions in front of me. I would have to ask that if I could file a 28J letter regarding that. I'm not prepared to specifically address those distinctions. But what I can say today in response to that point is that I understand his argument to be that one of those provisions required the consular officer to take a look at what he claims to be contradictory or exculpatory evidence suggesting that the stated reason was not valid. But if you look at the documents attached to his complaint, they don't support that inference. Nothing in any of the documents attached to his complaint suggests or undermines the consular officer's factual determination that Mrs. Del Valle had made a false claim of U.S. citizenship. His argument is just that those documents don't say that she did. Well, this court held in Del Valle and the Supreme Court has held in Din and Mandel that the consular non-reviewability doctrine prohibits, it also restricts disappointed visa applicants from seeking to obtain sort of this sort of discovery or record review in an attempt to challenge that decision. You can't circumvent the consular non-reviewability doctrine by attempting to package it as something other than a challenge to the merits of the consular officer's decision. And again, that was something that this court addressed in Del Valle, and they rejected the visa applicant's attempt to circumvent the consular non-reviewability doctrine by repackaging the relief that he was seeking.
But you obviously don't think we should look at those documents.
I don't think you need to look at those documents. The only reason I mention it is that I understand those documents to be the sole basis for his argument, and I don't think you need to look at them because Del Valle says you don't need to look at them, but if you do look at them, the critical point is that they don't support the point that he's trying to make.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Stoller, rebuttal?
Oh. You have said that some language in the Supreme Court opinion in Den and or Mandel suggests that there might be this additional exception for procedural error. But where? What page, what line?
Yeah, there's a citation to this in, I believe, it's in our appellate brief in footnote 30. Well, it's Kleindienst at 769, Din with the Supreme Court Reporter at 2128. It talks about the due process violation, which I understand that we haven't alleged, but it goes to this issue of the failure to follow the regulation. So, you know, part of this I think is important to understand.
Well, you said a Supreme Court cite 2128. That's the initial page of Kerry v. Dan. That's not...
I'm sorry. It's not a pinpoint site. My apologies. I don't have the pinpoint site in front of me. I read it incorrectly.
But the U.S. pinpoint site is 769?
Yeah, at 769, correct. So, you know, Mandel had to do with, I think it was a professor trying to come into the United States to speak, and it was all about whether he had engaged or was involved in some type of, you know, anti-U.S. government or pro-communist conduct. And you know, I think that Mandel says that, you know, the judiciary is not going to go in and tell consular officers if they refuse a visa on something grounds similar to that, you know, that we're going to look behind that. Same thing when you come to Kerry versus Din. It's an issue of national security or involvement with an organization that's been deemed to be a designated terrorist organization, the Taliban. You know, these are different cases that involve pretty straightforward issues. And my colleague is right when it comes to the documents. The documents don't say, I guess, pardon my English, that the spouse made a false claim to false representation to being a United States citizen. But what the statute says is, if Customs and Border Protection comes upon someone who makes a false representation to being a United States citizen, they shall be deported. So the absence of a document is an indication that the underlying factual scenario itself did not occur, did not happen.
But that means that you're just asking us to review the evidence and make a different determination than the consular officer. Why isn't that in the heart of what we've said is committed to the discretion of the consular officer?
I'm asking the court to force the State Department to follow its regulation and do that, not asking the court to make that determination.
So here's a question I had. I apologize if I missed something in the record. How do we know that they didn't review this information?
I don't know, other than I sent emails to them, gave them the documents, and what I got back was exactly the same information that was on the refusal sheet. So my assumption, and may I respond over time, my assumption would be that they did not review the documents that we provided to them, because those documents make evidently clear that there was no false claim to U.S. citizenship. This is, I understand that the courts do not want to get involved in this political activity of issuing visas at foreign consulates. The problem with it is that the consular officer can simply say, you made a false representation to being a U.S. citizen. I don't need to tell you why. I just decided it. And there doesn't need to be any evidence. The courts are not going to be involved in it. And if we adopt the government's position, then when we go to federal court to try and force the agency to follow the regulation and seek to overcome that ground, no response is good enough. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next case will be argued remotely, so we may need a moment or two to get that set up.